Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I need some kind of music today, but we don't know what music to play. We're going to talk about the questions that still linger about the elevator shaft death in San Francisco, the death that's already been swept under the rug by the SFPD, by the ADL. Where is the ADL when you need them? They're pretty big when you don't need them, but they're nowhere to be found in this case. It's very interesting to me that questions still linger about the death of the Israeli activist. Many people are saying he was thrown down an elevator shaft on his way to an Arabic class that had been canceled, and yet the police have already said it's an accident. Now, we're going to talk today a little bit more about the strange death of Dr. Daniel J. Kleeman. In fact, on michaelsavage.com, we have pictures of the death shaft, the elevator shaft. And according to someone who went there and took pictures and sent them around the internet, there are three elevators in that building, and the shaft that he allegedly fell down is the only one that has marks on the outside of the door. It looks like there was a struggle. People have gone there. They see. Go to michaelsavage.com. You see dirt all over the door, footprints. Are they handprints? Yet the police are not interested in any of this evidence. Again, I ask you again, why am I the only one in the national local media who is looking at this case and saying there was foul play? Why is this the only show in America that had the inspector of the police department in charge of the case on the show? And why did they switch inspectors today? Why did they throw the inspector off the case and put another one on it today? Today, there are more questions than there were yesterday. Today, we find out that 2 weeks prior to his death, Dr. Kleeman was at a pro-Israel event at the University of California at Berkeley, where violence erupted with a group called Students for Justice in Palestine. Kleeman had called on pro-Israel activists in the community to bring Israeli flags and stand with the Zionist students at Berkeley for this vigil. And mysteriously, 2 weeks later, he's found dead at the bottom of an elevator shaft in a building where he was taking Arabic classes. We also find today that there appear to be signs of a struggle on the outside of the elevator doors on the same floor in the building where Kleeman met his death. And we know this not thanks to the efforts of the SFPD, but because of an individual who had the brains to go to the building, take pictures and post them on his website. If there was a struggle outside of the elevator on the seventh floor where we know Kleeman went, then this would seem to obliterate the police theory that his death was an accident which occurred as he was trying to escape from the inside of a broken elevator. There are no marks on the inside of the door so far as we know. There are only signs of a struggle on the outside of the elevator door. This tale becomes more and more curious. But the San Francisco Police Department doesn't seem to be very curious. Remember the old movies where the policeman would say, "Move along, people, there's nothing to see here"? That's what the SFPD has been trying to say. In fact, when my people called the inspector we spoke to on this show yesterday, he said the department had prohibited him from talking to us. But now, because of the Savage Nation, the truth may come out. We again are going to call for an independent investigation. We are all going to ask why the Anti-Defamation League is silent in this case. We're going to ask why Barbara Boxer, the big mouth from Brooklyn, has said nothing, why Dianne Feinstein has said nothing, why all of the famous Jewish senators have said nothing. We're going to ask why they've said nothing, but we know the answer. The answer is because they're worthless lobbyists, and they have no representation within them for the people. They do not represent the interests of the people, which is why the Congress has a rating lower than that of George Bush. The people have lost faith in government. That means they've lost faith not in the American system of government, but in the charlatans who have seized the reins of power. Now, if you have evidence in this case, I'm going to ask you to call 1-800-449-8255. We're going to post it today verbally on the Savage Nation. We again ask you to contact the San Francisco office of the FBI and ask for an independent investigation in the strange death of Dr. Daniel J. Kleeman. I also want to talk about a totally disconnected story, and that is layoffs in the New York publishing industry. Big media is just like big autos. You hear Detroit is asking for handouts, right? Well, today we find out that the economy has crashed down on an industry that they thought was immune from the worst, and that's book publishing. Layoffs at Random House, layoffs at Simon & Schuster. Why did this happen? The answer is very, very straightforward. Just as Detroit has produced cars that fewer and fewer people wanted, and people found more dynamic automobiles being made abroad, it is the same with publishing. The old line dinosaurs in New York, the Random House, the Simon & Schuster, those type of publishers, Bantam, Dell, have been run by hacks who came out of the publicity departments 20 years ago, who crawled out of the sales departments 20 years ago, and started selecting books that nobody wanted to read. Books such as celebrity titles. Books such as those written by Hillary Clinton or, what is her name, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. They paid $10, $15 million for the book, and they earned back $12,000. For 20 years now, New York publishers have been publishing celebrity titles, titles by famous politicians that didn't earn back advances, gay and lesbian titles ad nauseum, and of course, the all-important global warming myth in order to get Al Gore on a board of directors. I haven't any idea where they published them, but I do know why Random House, Simon & Schuster, Bantam, Dell, and publishers such as that nature, Doubleday, are going down the tubes. They're identical or they're akin to the auto industry. And the fact of the matter is they don't need to be bailed out because it wouldn't help. If you have old hacks such as these old guys like Applebaum and Rubin and old hacks that I remember running into 25 years ago, they're never going to publish the right kind of book that you want to read. They're going to continue to publish the same kind of mainstream, let us say, rubbish that fewer and fewer people are reading. How is it that I'm thriving as an author? Now, remember, I have written over 20-some-odd books, most of which were published in New York, and I started, actually not started, this is the first book, Psychological Nudity, I ever produced myself, and it's going into a third printing, advertised only on my own website, not on Larry King, not on Good Morning America, not on that blowhard Oprah Winfrey show. I don't need them. The new model is here. Do you realize we're going through a reformation in the media? Do you understand that the whole world is changing under your feet? There is no need for book publishers like this anymore, just as there's no need for the automakers anymore. People don't want the products they're making. Now, there's an attendance story, and a story appendage to this. I was shocked to read this morning the following headline, Kennedy Auction, Hangout with Bill O'Reilly. And it says, AP, for those hard-to-please people on your holiday gift list this year, consider some unusual presents. The chance to hang out with Bill O'Reilly, sing with Aretha Franklin, or tour the Capitol with Nancy Pelosi. My immediate reaction was that if I was into S&M, I would call a dominatrix rather than subject myself to any of this torture. But the biggest story is this. Why would Bill O'Reilly associate with the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Human Rights when the proceeds will fund the center's efforts both domestically and globally? The answer is because Bill O'Reilly has long been known to be a liberal, disguised as a Republican or conservative, excuse me, in order to peddle his radio show. The question is, why did O'Reilly's radio show fail? And I'll let you, the listener, call on that. Why has O'Reilly failed in radio? 1-800-449-8255. Why would it fail? My show is thriving. It's never been bigger. 1-800-449-8255. So those are some of the topics. Who will be next to fail in talk radio? Why do you think the leprechaun failed in talk radio? Today we read about the radio obituary of Bill O'Reilly, the leprechaun. And my simple answer is that he had no talent for radio. He is successful on television because he has an ex-stripper next to him who continues to cross her legs. But you can't use ex-strippers on the radio, can you? They don't translate through the airwaves. Why has liberal talk radio failed? And who will fail next? The strange case of Dr. Daniel J. Kleeman. These are some of the topics we'll talk about. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin with a caller out of Kansas, out of Los Angeles. Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation. What is the topic you're calling about?
I'm calling about the elevator situation. I'm very skeptical about the reports. Number one, I believe that any building code that you could look up in California would designate that you've got to have an out-of-order sign on the door. If a shaft was open like that, they would probably put that yellow tape across on each floor or those orange cones. I can't believe that.
Well, the San Francisco Police Department has no questions. They've already assumed it was an accidental death. It couldn't have been any of the Palestinians that were engaged with him in hate and fighting with each other. I mean, this guy was let's start with reality here. The guy is a Zionist. He's very out front. He's also a guy who goes to rallies and screams at Palestinians, taunting them, they taunting him. And suddenly he's dead at the bottom of an elevator shaft in the very building he went to an Arabic class. To me, it has all the earmarks of a homicide. But apparently it doesn't strike that chord here in San Francisco, where there's a homicide epidemic. We have an out-to-lunch mayor who's interested in talking about the flooding of the airport from global warming that may occur 1,000 years from now. But you'd expect more from a police department, wouldn't you?
Yes, here's another point. Every elevator in California has to have a signal for deaf people. So if that door was opening, a bell would go off or some kind of signal to alert deaf or blind people.
And well, why don't you send that information to the San Francisco FBI? Maybe they'd be interested in investigating taking it away from the SFPD, which apparently has assumed it's automatically an accident. Do you think this was an accident or a homicide? What does your gut tell you?
I think it's a homicide. Nobody would walk into a shaft like that. You'd have to be totally on drugs or out of your mind.
Can you explain why the media in San Francisco won't cover this story? You know, this is the biggest murder mystery we've had in this city in years, and yet the vermin in the media won't cover this story. They're obsessed with Proposition 8 and the Archbishop. That's all they talk about day in and day out. Gay, 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 gay. And here's a gay man who's dead, and they have nothing to say about it. Why? Because he was a Zionist. Apparently his Zionism trumped his gayness. They're insane here. I'll be back.
Savage.
Well, look, if the San Francisco Police Department has become so politicized that it won't investigate an obvious homicide, which most people with a brain are calling a homicide, and the FBI apparently is not stepping in, somebody's protecting somebody here. Somebody's protecting somebody here. And for the life of me, I can't understand it. Why would they protect? Let's take the worst case scenario. Let's say the police department knows it's a homicide. What are they covering up and why? I don't understand that. Well, what is it that they're afraid to disclose? That there are jihadists in San Francisco at SF State? That there are gangs of jihadists in the city? Everybody knows that. Except Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein. Maybe they should go on the Homeland Security Committee. Maybe they want to make Dianne Feinstein the head of the FBI, and since she's perfect for the job. So that's one topic. I've said all I'm going to say on it. There's nothing more I could say. If the FBI won't cover this, if the SFPD has swept it under the rug, if the so-called alleged Jewish community won't cover it, I move away. I don't care anymore. I don't know this guy from a hole in the wall. And let me tell you something else. I'm not a Zionist, and I'm not a member of the Zionist community. I want to make that very clear. I just believe in justice. And if I see a guy who I disagree with on 99% of his issues, he was a radical bicycle maniac, the type that clogged the streets up on Friday night, the type of people I despise who should have been thrown in jail, a troublemaker through and through. But I think he was killed. That's what bothers me. If they could get away with killing him, they could kill you, they can kill anybody in this city and get away with it. You get away with murder in this city if they get away with this. That's what I'm talking about. It puts everybody at risk. You know, I could imagine a story like this in New York, even now, never mind in the 50s, today. Even today, a Zionist activist, death at the bottom of an elevator shaft after an Arabic class. It would be all over the New York newspapers for weeks. The writers in New York wouldn't let the story go. But we don't have journalism in San Francisco. We have nothing. There's not a journalist in the city of San Francisco, not one. They're high school level hacks and hackettes. In New York, they'd be outside the elevator with cameras. They'd be interviewing the police. They'd interview everybody in that Arabic class. They'd interview Kleeman's friends. They'd go to Schenectady to the funeral and ask the parents. They wouldn't let it go until something broke in this case. We don't have a media in San Francisco. We haven't had one here for 30 years. It's worthless, which is why I, a conservative, a man out of place in San Francisco, have the most popular talk show in the San Francisco area in the afternoons. I have the most popular show, not because the people agree with me necessarily, but because at least they're hearing a semblance of reality in a world of unreality. Do you understand that? And I could go on and on and on until I'm blue in the face. But if we have a police chief who cannot fire a gun, if we have a police chief in this city who was put in there for political reasons, a laughingstock surrounded by radical feminists, we have a low morale in the police department. And the people themselves are useless. The people in this city are the most apolitical people in the country. They have been pushed aside. They say nothing about anything. Nothing. The only issue that can be talked about here is gay. Proposition 8. Gay, which proves that the Bible was right. That when you become so obsessed with your homosexuality, the whole society will be pulled down into the toilet with you. If that's all that's on your mind is your genitals, then you will destroy not only yourself, but the whole society with you. That is what the Bible was trying to warn you. You are so blind to a homicide because you're obsessed only with the right for a gay to marry. It shows that the Bible was right. It shows that when you engage in this kind of narcissistic, anti-family behavior, what you wind up doing is blinding the entire society and obliterating any other subject. And therefore, you must understand that you have given up a core value of your own humanity by obsessing on this particular aspect of your being. Sexuality is very important. But when it becomes the most important thing in your life, you become an obsessed person. And as you well know, obsessives are often blinded to everything around themselves except their obsession.
Savage.
We're talking about a couple of topics. The strange death of Dr. Daniel J. Kleeman down an elevator shaft after an Arabic class. Play the music. And the we're playing Awake for Bill O'Reilly in radio. There's only so many, you know. Well, whatever. Okay. I don't know the guy very much. Do I know him? I don't really know him. I don't like him. Of all the people in the media, I hear he's got the worst personality. Look, it's that kind of business. Everyone's in competition with each other. He's not a fan of mine. I'm not a fan of his. But, you know, he had an ex-stripper. I don't know who she was. She looked like an ex-stripper from Schenectady. I don't even know who it was. All she did was laugh at his jokes. And they were bad. Play the music, will you? For God's sake. All right, let's go to the callers. I asked a couple of questions. You want to talk about the elevator death? You want to talk about who will be the next to fail in talk radio? Why do you think the leprechaun failed in talk radio? We'll go to the other topics later on here in the Savage Nation. Let's go to San Francisco, KNEW, Art. Go ahead, please. Art, what's your topic?
Oh, hi, Mike. I love your show. Absolutely fantastic. Listen, about who's going to die next in radio, it's got to be Lou Dobbs.
Who, wait? Lou Dobbs? Who? The bartender?
Exactly, Mr. Independent. He never
said, I mean, look, he ripped off the Independent from me, the Independent Nation. He ripped off half my music when he started. The man is an empty suit. He sounds like a guy with a greasy apron in a bar in New York on 48th Street and 8th Avenue that I used to know.
You know, all he ever does on the air is tell everybody how he's independent and he's a populist.
Right. And he has one topic, which is immigration. You know, he listened to my show long enough to think he could get rich, too.
But this is a guy who never says anything. His audience, you know, you listen to him and go, God, for heaven's sake, say something. Take a stand. He never takes a stand on anything. The most boring guy in
He's on CNN. What do you expect?
He's a bore. I mean, so he's got the guy.
Well, the next guy to go on television, I would actually pay to see him go. I'd pay $50,000 to Fox to get rid of Meatloaf's son, the son of Meatloaf. You know who that is? If you can say who the son of Meatloaf is, you win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. I'll narrow it down. The son of Meatloaf has a twisted mouth and he's on Fox News. Who was the son of Meatloaf?
Oh, boy.
Sorry, you don't win the prize. The son of Meatloaf is, first of all, you have to go to Meatloaf himself. Wallace, Chris Wallace is the son of Meatloaf. Now, why do I say the son of Meatloaf? First of all, Meatloaf himself was his father, Mike Wallace. Mike Walachinsky, Mike Wallace, was last heard from publicly when he threw Meatloaf, allegedly threw a Meatloaf at a parking cop in New York. His driver stopped for him to get his favorite Meatloaf on the way home. And a parking guy in New York, a cop came over and said, you got to move the car. Meatloaf went crazy. Now, Meatloaf's on drugs, on manic depressive medication, I think, according to his own admission. Apparently, he was low on meds that day, and he threw the styrofoam Meatloaf thing at the cop. And then in New York, they swept it under the rug because he's such an important man. So there's a guy called the son of Meatloaf, who is Wallace, Chris Wallace on Fox. He has a real sneery, like, mouth, like a twisted mouth, like Ted Koppel's daughter. Remember Ted Koppel's daughter? They tried her out for a few years. They had to retrain her. They almost had to do surgery on her mouth, where her mouth would always turn to the left and look terrible. They probably had to take it to India for some kind of cheap surgery. She's not seen anymore. This guy's mouth is frightening. But the point is, he's next to go. Why? Other than doing hack interviews with Republicans who agree to go on a show because he's the son of Meatloaf and won't ask him any real questions, what has he got to talk about now? Oh, Obama called Ross Lehman and hung up, and she hung up. What an exciting story. I told you after the election I'd be one of the few people to survive in the media. You don't want to listen to that other rubbish. I know that. Now, I'm not going to now sit and talk about myself. I do enough of that, I admit. But now let's go to the big humunga here. I asked you not about the bartender in Duffy's Tavern. Hey, play Duffy's Tavern music for me for
Bristol
a minute.
Bristol Myers, the makers of Sal Hepatic, a famous laxative, and Minute Rub, modern chest rub, bring you Duffy's Tavern.
Hey, Ralphie! I'm an independent. I hate them immigrants, huh?
But let's go to the big Canunga here, the big Carnuba Wax, O'Reilly, who has an ego on him that makes me look like Mahatma Gandhi compared to him. Why did O'Reilly flop in radio is the real question. I mean, I'm asking you, we're going to do a few calls on it, and that's the end of it. I'm not making that the whole, issue. Why did O'Reilly flop in radio? Why is he finished? Let's start in Houston, Texas. Kevin, your opinion on why O'Reilly flopped in radio.
It's an honor, Dr. Savage. I believe he flopped because he comes across as a Hollywood actor, and I'll never forget the moment I stopped listening to him was the fact that when the Muslim went and shot this school up in Utah, he covered the story, but he failed to cover the fact that he was given a hero's burial when coming back home. I had to learn that from your show. So,
Oh, the shooting in the mall. Yeah, the boy from Albania who was sent back to Albania to a hero's funeral.
That's right.
Okay, everyone has their reason. I'm sure there are people who stopped listening to me for something I said. But that doesn't destroy an audience. The occasional loss of a listener here and there, you have to expect that. But the man is finished. He's leaving radio. And you have to ask why he failed in radio, since he's such a big success on television. And I mean, he's a big success. He has a fairly good TV show. He has the ex-strippers that sit around them crossing their legs. They do lipstick nice. That's a great format that they have on that channel, and that works. I don't have that capacity here in radio. I can't put an ex-stripper on. I mean, occasionally my dog will bark, but it doesn't hold up to a pretty girl who crosses her legs and laughs at your jokes. San Diego, Tanya, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's an honor. Bill O'Reilly is a stuffed suit. He's a political puppet, and when he had Obama and Hillary on, and they wouldn't come on your show because you would ask them the questions that the Americans want to have answers to, I thought, you phony stuff suit, you money player, you political halfway house. Oh, he's just, he has no straight opinions. He's a, whoever makes me look good, if you make me look good, that's where I want to be. And I
He's also been attacking conservatives in talk radio for years, calling us extremists, as though his compromised positions make him something other than a compromised man.
True.
I mean, he continues to attack his core audience. Remember, Fox News was created as an alternative to the liberal media, and they did a very good job for a number of years. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, they started to move to the left, and they haven't stopped moving to the left. And now that Obama has won, they've thrown away their entire interest in the base. They're rushing as fast as they can to become the new CNN, in my humble opinion, in order to qualify to get some of these political hacks on their show, their shows over the next few years. So they think the conservative movement is dead and conservative listeners are unimportant. They're 100% wrong. The whole reason the Republicans lost is because they shafted the conservative base. I know that for a fact.
I agree with you 100%. I won't listen to him. The minute he comes on after you, I'm out of there.
All right, whatever. Thanks for the call. 1-800-444. Well, I forget my number. I don't even know anymore. Anyone want to talk about publishing? Publishing industry, Random House, Simon & Schuster, you know, downsizing. Does anyone buy books from them anymore? Bantam Dell Head, Irwin Applebaum is departing. Applebaum is departing. Steven Rubin is negotiating for a different job. All they've published are celebrity books, politicians' books, gay and lesbian books, global warming fantasies. Of course they're going out of business. And have to get rid of them. What's the difference? The world's changed. I'm lucky that I've adapted. I learned a long time ago as a student of biology that the animals that perished were those who couldn't adapt. I learned it in high school, adapt or die. And that's why many animals failed to adapt. They may have been big and strong, but they died anyway. You know, the classic example, why did the dinosaurs disappear? Well, okay, you say a meteor hit. That's a new theory now. But the existing theory for a very long period of time was not that a meteor hit the Earth and wiped them off the planet. That's a recent theory. It's that they failed to adapt to changing conditions and they slowly perished. It's the same with the big three in the auto industry. The reason they're perishing is they're dinosaurs. The reason New York Publishing is dying is because they're dinosaurs. The books they put out are books nobody wants to read. Don't you understand? And I'm surviving. I am surviving. And it's the new model that I'm using. And why? Because I started as a writer. I've always been a writer, a nonfiction writer. I've always been a nonfiction writer. And I'm perhaps I'm a very successful nonfiction writer. Radio was very late in my career. I went into this very late in life. I went into radio at a point when most people leave a career and retire. But I don't have a reason to retire. There's nothing I want to do that I can't do unretired. You know what I'm saying? I don't understand why people retire to begin with. It's not in my blood. I don't understand. Would Picasso retire? Picasso retire and stop painting? Matisse would retire? What, and move to the south of France and do what? Go to the gambling casinos? So in that sense, I'm the Matisse of radio or the Picasso of talk radio. Whatever way you want to put it, doesn't matter to me. And I'll never retire. I'll keep talking until there's nothing left for me to say, and that's probably going to be impossible to believe of. There's always something to say. If you have an interesting mind and you have a mind that's interested in the world, how could you not be interested in what's going on around you? Like right now, I'm in a family dispute again. I'm sorry to make it personal. They want me to go on a vacation with them. I don't want to go on a vacation. And they're insisting I go on a vacation. I don't want to go. I haven't any idea what to do with myself on a vacation anymore. Now, maybe you say it's sad that all you know how to do is work. You could say that. You could say it's sad. But I don't feel that I'm sad that I don't want to go on a vacation. Vacation means to vacate. Why would I want to vacate my view of the world? Why would I want to vacate my thinking? What would I do there? First of all, the thought of running around in the heat and in water and eating in horrendous restaurants in Mexico, even the best of them, I don't want to be there. I don't want to come back with Turista, even if it's the best place on earth. I can't sit through one of those. Remember the movie that I told you about last week that I really loved? Ben Stiller in The Heartbreak Kid. Fabulous movie. I love that movie, but it was filmed in Cabo San Lucas. I could never take a place like that. Oh, the best room, the presidential suite. Great. You check in, you look at the room. Wow, look at this. Oh, look at that. Look, it has a VCR. Wow. And what else? Oh, there's the ocean out there. Oh, there's a palm tree. Now what? Tick, tick. 24 hours a day, you don't know what to do with yourself. So you go swimming and you get a burn, or you go swimming and you get a jellyfish. Then you come back and have a horrendous meal. And I don't want to drink and eat. No, I'm not going, is what I've been saying. They're mad at me. It's like, Dad, come on, we want to do something for you. Well, go without me. Send me pictures. You know what I'm saying? Now, since you don't want to talk about the San Francisco Police Department brushing aside the strange death of Dr. Daniel J. Kleeman, since you don't want to talk about why the FBI won't initiate an investigation, since you won't talk about why the media, so-called media in San Francisco, has been told not to cover this story, I will talk about why I will not go on vacation. 1-800-449-8255. San Diego, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, how you doing there, Mike? I was an ex-homicide detective back in Las Vegas, and to me, this sounds like a total inside job with that murder in San Francisco. It sounds like that.
All right, hold it. Why would the SFPD be covering up, and what would they be covering up for who? Why?
Yeah, I have no idea, Mike. I don't live in San Francisco.
But why? What are they covering up? Let's take the worst-case scenario. The doctor was thrown down an elevator shaft. Who are they covering for and why? I don't understand it.
But I don't know either, Mike, but if I was in that department, I'd be putting in my resignation course there about securing the crime scene and doing a proper investigation, because this guy...
Absolutely. The crime scene has been contaminated from the minute the SFPD flat feet arrived on the scene. And I'm telling you, something's wrong with the picture, but for the life of me, I can't understand who they're covering up for and why. That's the part that mystifies me. Who could have done it? Let's say it was done by one of the Palestinians that he and they were getting for years at each other, right? Well, why would they want to cover for one of them? Why?
I have no idea, but it seems like the PD has been paid off by a major powerful organization in San Francisco. I couldn't tell you who it is, but it just sounds too fishy to me, and God help that department. Because
why won't the FBI touch this case, Rick?
I don't know. Because usually I had a similar case like that back in Vegas, and we touched it, we investigated, we did that, and we even called the FBI for further assistance to help us out with this.
Isn't that interesting? So you called for the FBI's assistance, and they've already in San Francisco, before they got there, decided it was an accident.
Yeah, before the body was even stiff, they were calling it an accident. Then
yeah, something's wrong with the picture, Rick. Thanks for the call. It is 48 minutes after the hour. Things are very strange in San Francisco. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Strange things are happening in San Francisco. Strange things. More questions today than there were yesterday. Very, very, very strange things. And go to michaelsavage.com. There appears to be signs of a struggle on the outside of the elevator doors on the same floor in the building where Dr. Kleeman met his death. And we know this not thanks to the efforts of the San Francisco Police Department, but because of an individual who had the brains to go to the building, take pictures, and post them on his website. He says there are signs of a struggle outside of the elevator on the seventh floor where we know Dr. Kleeman went. That seems to add up to a homicide, not an accident, and yet they've already moved on. They said it's an accident. The useless media in the Bay Area won't cover the story. They're focused again on the stories nobody wants to hear. And we're trying to get the truth out here. That's all there is to it. Otherwise, look, if the media becomes what they are in San Francisco and the major media, you may as well roll over and die, because you're going to be living in the ex-Soviet Union. They'll start taking people off the streets and no one will care where they went. And you could be next for your political opinions. That's really what's going to happen here. I'm telling you, unless you remain vigilant, we're going to move into the ex-Soviet Union right here in this country. When you have a press that is as supine as the press is in San Francisco, and as supine as it is in the major media, where they won't say Muslim or Islam after a slaughter of the type we saw in Bombay, what can happen next? Virtually anything can happen next. And you've seen nothing yet. Obama has not yet taken office. Wait until you see him taking office. If you think it's bad now, wait until you see the zipper they put on your mouth in a very short period of time. Okay? Walla Walla Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Bill O'Reilly and the reason why he's not on the radio anymore. As I see it, he doesn't have anything to say. He doesn't have a good mind to think quickly about the issues that we have of the day. When he talks on the radio, every other word that comes out of his mouth is and he's this and that, saying to me that he's trying to think of something to say to entertain his audience. I think he's a good actor, but on his radio or on his TV program, he never goes through the and he never bobbles once in his speech because he's reading off a teleprompter. I think he's a good actor, and he can read a teleprompter, but he can't come up with a good thought on the radio. When he's talking to a microphone, he can't come up with anything to say to his audience to keep them entertained, and I lost interest with him real quick.
You know, it's very interesting how astute listeners to talk radio actually are, which is exactly why Nancy Pelosi and Obama want to close down conservative talk radio. They know that we reach the most, let us say, curious minds in America who look at the media or listen to the media. Politically, you could be all over the map, but you tend to be independent-minded and think about things and want to analyze things for yourself. You don't want things pre-digested for you. And I believe that the radio audience, particularly those that listen to talk radio, conservative talk radio, which is talk radio, are the most astute in America, that is, of the media watchers. And that's exactly why you're an endangered species, because the government knows you're the people they have to silence. They understand that they almost have the entire government nation under control. What with the influx of illegal aliens who are subliterate or illiterate and don't even know what's going on and can care less, with the perverts who are obsessed only with their sexual issues, and with the mainstream Democrats who are obsessed only with Democrats rather than with truth, there's only one audience left to target, and that's you. And I think that's why O'Reilly is finished in radio. He understands that he lost his audience a long time ago because they were onto him a long time ago. But he's not the biggest issue. There are many bigger issues, and we'll talk about them when I come back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Chill, chill. Leave it to the police. Leave it to your officials. Let authorities step in. You don't want to rush to any conclusions here. Leave it to the authorities in San Francisco. Leave it to the authorities in government to bail you out. Leave it to Hank Paulson in the Treasury to fix the economy. Leave it to Ben Bernanke in the Federal Reserve. He'll fix things. Let the authorities do their job. Leave it to President Bush to get us out of Iraq. Leave it to the SFPD to get to the bottom of the elevator shaft. Leave it to the authorities. Don't ask too many questions. Move along, move along, move along. Take a chill pill. What do I care? What do I care? I don't know this guy. That's all. What do I care? So they killed him. What do I care about that? So some Arabs he insulted threw him down an elevator shaft, conspired for a long period of time and threw him down a shaft. What do I care? You don't care? I don't care. The San Francisco Police Department doesn't care. Why should I care? Why should you care? After all, he's just another Jew, just another Jewish activist thrown down an elevator shaft. Many Jews were killed in Bombay. You didn't care about that either. So what's the difference, one Jew or another Jew? What's the difference if there's a mini Holocaust going on around the world? Why should you care? You shouldn't care. You should only care about your 401k. God. I have nothing to add. Why don't you call 1-800-449-8255? O'Reilly Shows True Colors joins with Kennedy's another McCain. I think that O'Reilly and McCain are almost the same personality, by the way. The same type of personality. Here's another story I linked up from Reuters on michaelsavage.com. Moscow mayor links gays to spread of AIDS. Oh, my God. Moscow has banned gays and lesbians from promoting their way of life because they can help spread HIV/AIDS, the Russian capital's mayor was quoted as saying today. That's so unjust. That is so bad. I think we should go to war with Moscow over this. I really think like somehow I think maybe go to war like or something like that, like maybe use the military to stop those Ruskies. The mayor said, Mayor Yuri Luskov, speaking at an HIV/AIDS conference in Moscow, said there was no scientific proof that condoms provided full protection against sexually transmitted diseases. He said, quote, "We have banned and will ban the propaganda of sexual minorities' opinions because they can be one of the factors in the spread of HIV infection," Luskov was quoted as saying by state-owned RIA. He then went on and said, "Some homegrown Democrats consider that sexual minorities are a major indicator and symbol of democracy, but we will continue to ban the spread of their views," close quote. Luskov's administration banned several gay rights marches in Moscow in the interest, it argues, of ensuring security and preventing public disorder. Russia decriminalized homosexuality in 1993, but tolerance is not widespread. That's interesting. Tolerance. Now, wait a minute. If it's not criminal to act out certain sexualities, what do you mean tolerance? You mean acceptance, don't you mean? See, again, they're confusing it, Roy. There's a difference between acceptance and tolerance. Ah, I see. Ooh, the Russian Orthodox Church disapproves of homosexuality. My, my, how naughty. How retro, what a throwback those Orthodox Christians are in Russia. That's awful. While still president, Vladimir Putin quipped that his approach to sexual minorities was guided by Russia's demographic problems. The country is short of children. No kidding. Short of children. Any beautiful girl who can goes into pornography and moves to Los Angeles. Luskov's views are widely known and he has repeatedly banned gay parades in Moscow. 2 years ago, police, militant Russian Orthodox churchgoers, and neo-fascists attacked the first gay rights march in Moscow. And then, of course, the gays are attacking him. Well, there it is. There's the throwback Russians linking gays to the spread of AIDS. They really need sensitivity training and diversity training. I really do think that we should go over. I think we should maybe go to war or something over this in order to make Russia safe for homosexuality. So if you want to talk about that, don't call me. Call somebody else. We can talk about anything you want. The death in San Francisco at the bottom of the elevator shaft, don't bother me with it. It's a foregone conclusion that he threw himself down the shaft. Because in San Francisco, the only victim, well, the only victim that could possibly be would be a designated minority. And although he was gay, the doctor, it didn't count because his Zionism trumped his gayness. You understand? That's why the gays are not saying a word. And so we can't talk about that subject. It's verboten. It's forbidden in the new Soviet Frisco. Soviet Frisco. So I don't, you know, what am I going to do? Waste my time and talk about that? Does Detroit deserve help? That's something that the bartender would ask you. That's a topic that the bartender at Leprechaun would waste your time on. What do I care about Detroit? Why should I bail them out? Why? What do I care about them? It doesn't mean anything to me. Let the unions cut the wages and let the unions cut the benefits. You take a look at the production line. It looks like they work 5 minutes a day and then they go for diversity training. Oop, there goes my back. I put a fender in. What happened? I don't know. I was reaching across the production line when I had to go for a press a button, and I don't know. I want full disability for 90 years now. Oops, next case. Bring in the next worker here on our production line. They wonder why they're going bankrupt. Plus cars that apparently nobody wants. I don't know. I mean, I didn't buy a GM car myself. I didn't. I'll be honest with you. I don't know why. I just didn't. They don't make the kind of luxury car I want. Not they don't make good cars. They do, but they don't make great cars anymore. I have a 65 Caddy. Is that my day-to-day car? No. No, it isn't. I have a new Mercedes 600. Well, should I hide it? No. Why hide it? Why did I buy it? Because it's the best production luxury car in the world. It's fast. It's quiet. It doesn't break down. and I enjoy driving it. I like big, fat, fast cars, and that's the end of it. Speaking of cars, I almost got killed today on my bicycle. Oh, yeah, I can't even go into this. I'll give you a snapshot. I'm bicycling in a, like it's a mall thing. It has a parking lot. And for some reason, a woman lurched out with a mini car. You know those eco cars? There's some kind of little eco car that looks like a car that used to be in circuses when I was a kid in Ringling Brothers when 12 clowns would get out of it or 100 clowns. I don't know. They're all over the road. They're dangerous at any speed. This woman was shooting through the parking lot. She almost killed me. I screamed at her. I said, take your eco car and shove it. You almost killed me. You know what she said to me? It's your fault. You almost hit my car. Well, it was really awful. And then she said to me, you should die, she said to me, Miss Eco, with all of the Obama bumper stickers all over the back. You know, underneath the surface of a nice liberal, you know what there is, don't you? A nasty, sexually frustrated, a psychopathic fascist is what I found. They use their politics as a weapon. Oh, yeah, what a wonderful country, a country filled with love. Hey, play some Bing Crosby music for me. Let me take a pill. Let me take a chill pill. Let me calm down. Let me not focus on any of these topics. Why should I care? Why should I care if a doctor got thrown down an elevator shaft and the police are sweeping it under the shaft?
Sent to me, a partridge in a pear tree.
On the second day of Christmas.
Turn this off. This is horrible. This is enough to make you just go crazy. It's enough to make you become a Mayan, for God's sakes. Sacramento, Lyndon, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, in October of 2002, Primetime Live aired a one-hour documentary on the Zodiac investigation. And shortly after, a group of retired police officers, mostly from Vallejo, California, two federal agents working as a group, offered San Francisco Police Department an opportunity to scan the file of a suspect they felt was very viable in the Zodiac case. San Francisco Police Department said no. They had
why? Why do you suppose they're not interested in finding the Zodiac killer?
I have no idea. It's something that we have asked ourselves for several years, but they're totally uncooperative. And they do not share the information whether or not they do, in fact, have the DNA, which our group was primarily responsible for having the tests.
What year did you offer this information to the SFPD, Lyndon?
After October 2002.
So it's going back that far that this department is so disconnected from wanting to solve crimes. Well, you know we have a homicide epidemic in the city that's being swept under the rug. And this comes from the mayor. Make no mistake about it. This mayor is the biggest goofball in the history of this city. This mayor is living in a crackpot world. He talks about the airport being underwater unless we control global warming. And he sweeps aside the fact that we have a homicide epidemic.
Yeah, well, that's true. But it's not only in San Francisco. It's all over the Bay Area. It's all over the country.
Yes, it is. Police departments have been politicized. It's each man for himself.
Yes, sir. It's a sad truth.
But I find that the small town police departments are actually very good. The small towns, the suburban towns, I don't think that they're as politicized as the big city departments. Do you?
I don't think they're as politicized, but I don't think they're any more effective than your metropolitan, your larger police departments. Here in Vallejo, our homicide rate is quite high, and our solve rate is something like 12%.
12%. Unbelievable. That's one of the lowest solve rates in the country. Is that because they're hiring morons, or is that because they don't want to point the finger at those who are committing the homicides or mainly illegal aliens?
No, the truth of the matter is, seems to be that they're primarily drug-related, and if they are drug-related, it's a kiss-off, because the police departments then can say, oh, it's drug-related. And they won't even bother. They will make a futile attempt to find witnesses. But in these cases, witnesses are not forthcoming.
Well, because the witnesses are getting killed. We've had two or three cases of witnesses put into witness protection in San Francisco who were found murdered. That's how well protected they are in witness protection.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, you sound like an old timer in the police world, Lyndon.
Our district attorney many times will demand that the police officer divulge the name of their informants. And when the police officer refuses to do so, they lose, you know, their job is in danger.
Well, that way, if the chief of police can get the name of the informant can disappear. And that way there'll be no crime, and that way the crime rates stay lower.
Yeah.
No, that's what's... Look, you can laugh at it all you want, but we have a very dangerous situation in a country that's becoming increasingly, moving in this direction. We have over 100 homicides in San Francisco. We have a whack job mayor who's living in a dream world, who talks about everything except the gangbangers, everything except the homicide epidemic. And now you have a case that's not related to illegal aliens, not related to a gang, and they won't cover this one either.
Well, as I'll tell you, I think it would take a very extreme act of stupidity for anybody to fall down a damn elevator shaft. I don't think it's possible.
I don't think it's possible. In fact, it's impossible, according to all of the data that we've collected. The door's automatically locked. There's no way into the elevator. And if you go to my website, michaelsavage.com, you'll see pictures of the outside door. There are three elevators in that bank. The one where he allegedly fell down, is the only bank in which the exterior doors show a sign of a struggle. You can look at it right on my website. They're not interested in this. We try to send these pictures to the police department. They didn't even want to take them, Lyndon.
I believe it totally.
Well, why won't the FBI move in here?
Well, it's a problem of jurisdiction. It's a problem of authority. It was not until many years after the Zodiac became very popular that the FBI became somewhat involved in the case. But year after year, they would deny that they had any authority whatsoever. But when you file Freedom of Information, you will find that the FBI has a rather extensive file on the Zodiac.
Do you have any idea who the Zodiac killer is?
Yes, absolutely. We've known for several years.
Is he still living?
Yes, sir. He is.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm telling you the truth. And
where does he live? Does he run a major city, or is he a senator or a congressman?
Well, let's say he could drive to San Francisco in under an hour.
Oh, boy. You want to stay on the show and talk about it for a few minutes?
I would love to.
Stay on the show. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, we're talking about a death here in San Francisco that's being swept under the rug by the police and by the media for reasons I don't understand. I mean, if you say, who could have killed him? Why would they cover for someone who would have killed him? That's the part that bewilders me. Let's take the most obvious case. The guy was an activist. He taunted Palestinians. They taunted him. He took Arabic classes. You put two and two together. It was somebody in the class or someone related to someone in the class. They laid from threw him down the shaft and made it look like an accident. Premeditated murder. But why would the police cover for a person like that? That doesn't make sense to me. So a guy calls who's a policeman up in another jurisdiction, and is talking about now about the Zodiac murders. Lyndon in Sacramento, welcome. Lyndon, you say that you know who the Zodiac killer is?
That's correct. I have known since March 15th, 1971. It's a very fascinating, bizarre, almost unbelievable story, but the original investigator in the first homicide case, which occurred on Lake Herman Road here in Vallejo, was ordered to burn his files, destroy his notes, and never mention the suspect's name again.
But why is that, Lyndon?
Why is it? Because it involves a high-ranking official in the judicial system here in Solano County.
Oh, my God.
The group of officers that have been investigating this case for 37 years were forced into a covert operation sanctioned by the police that they could not and would not release information to us. So everything that we did, we had to do covertly without their knowledge.
So does this individual who you allege is the Zodiac killer, the real Zodiac killer, he's still living?
That's correct. He is.
But, Lyndon, does he know that you are one of the principals who are on to him?
We are fairly certain that he does, yes.
So if what you say is true, why hasn't he gone after you?
Well, I think it has a matter of to do, most likely, due to age.
Savage.
All right, welcome back to the radio show. Look, my website attracts several million viewers a month. My radio show, they say, is 8 to 10 million. I guess it's closer to 20 million listeners a week nationwide. Ask yourself a question. The newspapers are dying, yet my show is thriving. Newspapers are dying, yet my little unknown website, which never gets any promotion other than from this show, is thriving. Other websites are booming. Why is that? It's because the newspapers have failed to do their job. It's because the show that I do is basically a show about my view of the world, what I think is going on, and one man's opinion. I ask the questions that others don't ask. Why don't they ask them? Have they lost the ability to ask questions themselves? Maybe it's that far gone, I don't even realize it. That maybe the people in the media don't even know what questions to ask because they can't think. I don't know the answer. So we're focused now on Dr. Daniel Klayman, elevator shaft. Newspapers won't cover the story, swept under the rug. The police department says it's over. He fell. There's no interest whatsoever from the professional Jewish organizations like the ADL. Not a word. Not a word out of Boxer, Feinstein. Not a word out of anybody. Which leads me to believe something doesn't add up here, and I don't know who they're covering for. So then I get a call from a cop from Vallejo who says that he knows who the Zodiac Killer is. Lyndon, let's go back again on this because you have my attention. How old is the Zodiac Killer?
Well, as of today, he's 87.
Is he still capable of killing?
Yes, but according to the professionals that we've interviewed and consulted, for example, Robert Lundy from Stanford University has written several books on serial killers. Says that most likely, if a serial killer reaches a point of stability in his life, chances are they will never kill again. But there's always the potential for, since the trigger is always half-cocked, they could go on another killing spree. So this is entirely possible, but it's most unlikely.
So in other words, if a very old man is seen walking around a mall looking grizzled and crazed, look out for him.
Well, I would say so, and this particular individual has the uncanny ability, very well-spoken, very well-dressed, to lure very unsuspecting girls who would otherwise never enter a car with any stranger, would do so gladly.
Who did the Zodiac Killer target? Were they all the same type? Were they all young girls? I mean, young women?
99% of them were young women. For example, the only two males that he, there are three males that he attacked, two of them survived because he did not attack them with the same ferocity that he did the female companions.
Was he married?
Yes.
Did he have children?
No. No children.
Is he a white male?
Yes. Correct. Mm-hmm.
Was he at the level of a county legislator or a judge?
No, he was neither of the above, but he had some very influential contacts, if you will, that he was directly involved with, who covered for him, if you will, and issued certain orders to the respective police agencies here in Solano County that this man was not to be investigated. Now, what?
Lyndon, can I ask you a direct question?
Certainly.
Because I don't know anything about the Zodiac Killer. I really didn't pay much attention to it at the time. For some reason, it didn't attract my attention. Why are you so involved with this particular case? Are you him?
No, I'm not him. But I had a direct involvement and a interlude with him that was very, very frightening, and from that point on, the FBI agent here that I know personally ran a background check on him, and this is in the very, very beginning. And I was informed by the agent that he was a phony SOB. So when I asked him for clarification, I asked him, well, Floyd, what exactly do you mean? He says, Lyndon, he says, I cannot tell you. So anyhow, it's we think over the years.
So the basic point of your call is that although I am outraged that San Francisco's police department will not investigate the murder of this doctor, you say that's nothing new here.
Yes, I'm saying it's nothing new. I mean, it's a tragic that they will not.
All right. So you've been in the field. You're a retired policeman yourself. Let's take the case from the top down. Outspoken, pro-Zionist, Jewish, taking Arabic lessons, bottom of an elevator shaft. Who could they be covering for and why?
Well, I don't know if they could be covering for any particular person, but I will say this. At this stage in the investigation, they might kiss everybody off who thinks that they're not interested in the case because they don't want to disclose any evidence they feel could jeopardize the continued investigation.
You mean they're making believe they're not interested, and that's why they're doing this?
I think it's entirely possible, yes.
Well, that would be a positive if that was true.
That is, yes. That would be a positive.
Well, I had a caller yesterday who said that they're throwing basically dust in everyone's eyes, making believe they've got it solved in order to relax the potential perp.
This is what they've been doing with the DNA evidence in the Zodiac case since October 2002.
Well, I don't know. Who do you think would have done? Look, let's just cut to the chase. You're a former investigator. Who do you think could have done this to this doctor?
Well, I think it could be any number of people. More likely, it's probably a group effort between two or three individuals who conspired to do him in. I mean, it seems rather...
Doesn't it strike you as odd that the classes he was attending, the Arabic classes, would have been canceled and he didn't know about it?
Well, certainly. I mean...
In other words, they say they did a mass email. Did he get it? Well, obviously he didn't because he showed up. Why did he not get it? So if he didn't get it, maybe they didn't send it to him, but they sent it to everybody else. Wouldn't the first step be to investigate the school itself?
I would think so. Absolutely, and you want to preserve all that physical evidence on the doors.
Okay. Did you go to my website and look at the picture of the death elevator and see the signs of a struggle on that door that someone took the picture of today?
Oh, I've not yet done that, but I will.
Well, you can't believe it. There's three doors, three banks of doors, and only one bank, the one he allegedly fell down, has the sign of a struggle on it. Looks like footprints to me, although they're not clear enough for me to make out what it is. Hands, feet, something went on the outside of that door.
Well, with the forensic possibilities they have today, they can determine exactly what kind of print that is, what kind of shoe it came off of, and when it was made. So they got to preserve all that evidence.
Lyndon, let me ask you this. They say this man, in addition to being very vociferously pro-Israel, he was also a gay man, and that he dated one of the people in the Arabic class. Wouldn't you think, if you were running this investigation, you would immediately find out who that man was?
Well, certainly, because I would be looking for the jealous lover. And,
okay. You know, and how was he lured to this office on the night that the classes were canceled? How did he get lured there? Who called him? Who called him and said, look, even though classes are canceled, why don't you meet me there? We'll go for a drink or whatever. Or he didn't know the class was canceled and he showed up because there's videotape of him appearing at the lobby of the building, actually going up the elevator earlier in the day. He did ride the elevator up.
Well, I think you might be surprised shortly to learn that the San Francisco authorities are not overlooking this evidence, but they might be downplaying it because they don't want to tip their hand. They don't want anyone to know what they know.
All yeah, right, Lyndon. Well, you know what? I hope to God that's the case. I pray to God that the truth will come out in the strange death of Dr. Daniel J. Kleeman. And remember, I want to say again, I don't know the man. I never met the man politically. I probably disagree with him with 99% of what he stood for. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be interested in a homicide, an obvious homicide like this. Mr. Linden, I'm going to send you a free copy of my book, Psychological Nudity, because I think of all of them you might be most interested in, well, maybe Tippy dies and is thrown in a garbage truck. 1-800-449-8255. I'm sorry I hung up on Linden. Linden, call back so we can get your address. San Francisco, KNEW. Larry, your topic, please.
Good afternoon, Dr. Savage. How are you?
What's on your mind?
Well, retired Oakland PD, 23 years with Oakland. Four of those were as a homicide inspector. I might have some insight as to how SFPD got off on the wrong foot here, if you'd like to at least hear
it. I would like to hear it. I'd like to know what's going on.
Sure. When the first incident occurs, a reporting party calls 911, and if they mischaracterize the call, let's say they say to the 911 operator, a guy fell down the elevator shaft, it sort of starts the investigation going the wrong way.
So the elevator mechanics show up Tuesday morning. They smell something or whatever. They call the cops and they say, looks like someone fell down the shaft. And then they enter that into the logbook as an accidental death. And that's how they pursue it from that point on?
It's a little more complicated than that. A black and white's going to show up. A beat cop's going to show. Fire, rescue, paramedics are all going to come to see if the guy's still alive. And the beat cop then has to make a decision. He has three classifications. One is this is a natural. Obviously, that's not the case. The other two are what's called an SC, unexplained deaths. SC means suspicious circumstance that can be ruled accidental or a suicide. The last
right.
category is a homicide. A homicide is very expensive. It's very manpower intensive. It requires an awful lot of work.
Mm.
A lot of, this has been my experience once again, I've seen beat cops do this. They look and they go, heck, I would like this really not to be a lot of work today. So they just write it up initially as an SC, unexplained death, and send that report into homicide. Homicide gets that sometimes a day later. And the homicide inspector, I can't tell you how many times this happened to me, Dr. Savage, you kind of grabbed your head and you go, oh, my God. Because now it's very late. This whole thing has gotten cold. And if I've been listening to the show today, debating if I should even make this call, but if you talk to the inspector yesterday, I'm sure he got this dumped in his lap, and my guess is that homicide was not even out on the scene, that this was handled by the beat cop and the district sergeant who classed it as an SC, unexplained death. Homicide got it following this. It's now a cold case, which you undoubtedly have stirred up. There's no doubt in my mind. I know your power in the Bay Area. So
I have no power at all. I'm one man. I live alone, basically, in my own world. I'm just looking in from the outside, and I see a thing that looks so suspicious to me. It looks to me like they set him up. They laid for him. They planned this very well. They made it look like an accident. I mean, this was very carefully premeditated. But here's the big question. You're an astute guy. You have street smarts. You have great experience. I don't, in this field of homicide as a detective. Who in your, I don't mean person-wise, who could they be covering for if they are trying to cover for somebody?
Well, actually, they're not covering for someone at this point in time, Michael. They would very much like to immediately close this case, find the perp, as you call it, or the suspect, and arrest him and interrogate him. But clearly, they're now begging for some time, so I have to agree with the other inspector who called you before me. What they're probably doing now is backtracking and trying now after the fact to gather information on this SC, unexplained death report that's sitting like a rotten piece of garbage on this inspector's desk.
Well, Larry, I ask you, could you go to michaelsavage.com and look at the picture of the elevator door? They say he struggled from the inside, and yet this door shows a struggle on the outside of the doors.
I've actually already been to your website. I was there yesterday and today.
But the pictures are not very clear. I mean, it could be a smudge, but they say the other doors are clean. This looks like somebody was playing with that door with something, doesn't it?
The problem is you've got to now go back in time. The inspectors have to go back in time. It's very difficult because once the first error's been made, once it's
yes.
been classed as a potential
yes.
accident,
yes.
it's only when it shows up and that inspector starts to read this quote-unquote accident report, which we call an SC, unexplained death report, and he goes, oh, my God, it's too late in many cases to go back. So they're hoping this will go away. You are not going to allow it to go away, of course, but And I'm sure right now there's a lot of angst within the homicide.
I'm not the only one who's saying what happened here. There are other. Suddenly, there's some activist groups who are pressuring the department. There are some left-wing newspapers that are asking questions all of a sudden. And I believe that we should ask questions. It looks like a homicide to us.
Though I'm retired, I can guarantee you I still have my contacts, and I can assure you this case is active, and I don't want to say any more than that. But it's active. I know that it is. And people are looking into this because clearly they all wish they could go back in time to the first 911 call.
Right. Well, remember, he was laying there for how many days before they even found that he was there? 6 days? 3 days? 4 days? November 25th, he goes to a building that there's no classes, and then he's found Monday morning or Tuesday morning. He's laying there for 6 days under an elevator. That's a pretty long time, isn't it?
Yeah, the potential is that it was just misclassed originally, and that they're now looking at this, Mike.
No, I hear you, and I understand how bureaucracy works. I understand exactly what you're saying, and once you start off on the wrong track, you know, there's a saying I learned years ago that turned out to be 100% true in business, in personal relations. A very smart and successful businessman said it to me 30 years ago. He said, how it begins is how it goes. I found that to be true in every aspect of my life, whether it be a relationship, whether it be a so-called friendship or a business relationship. If it starts out contentious, it only stays that way. If it starts out sort of peaceful, it stays that way. I think that's what you're saying here.
It is, because there's a lot of people involved on that front-end decision, not only the beat cop, the district sergeant, the sector lieutenant. Everybody got involved in that and agreed that that should probably be classed as an SC unexplained death. And it didn't.
Larry, you sound a little bit like the Clint Eastwood character.
I'm not. But
No, but you have that verbal bearing of Clint Eastwood and Dirty Harry, Larry. Wish there were more guys like you left in the business. I hope there are. I'm sure there are still some guys who want to get to the truth no matter what it takes. Are you optimistic that they will get to the bottom of this, or do you think they're going to get nowhere?
You know, it's very difficult to reenact, to go back and do this, but if there's any DNA, if there's a... I can't go into details right now. I will not do that. But we do have, just like the caller before me made clear, we have investigative techniques today, which we didn't have 20 years ago. And they'll be doing a lot of comparisons to determine if there's a struggle. There's things we can do to look at that. And besides, there's
also... Let's say they find there was a struggle. Wouldn't you start with the school itself canceling a class and he doesn't know about it?
All the above, but you have to understand, you've still got the coroner's office. They have got to, by law, in California.
You know, you raise a very good point. You're saying the autopsy. Was he... They're going to show signs, for example, in the autopsy of whether he was dead before he was thrown down there, whether there was blunt trauma on his body separate from the fall, right?
Oh, you do know some stuff. That's all true.
We all watch enough television to know, you know, was he strangled? Was he knocked on the head? Are there marks on him that don't line up with a fall down an elevator shaft? That's what you're talking about, I assume. Stay in the line. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right. Well, look, we're almost out of time in this hour. I want to go back to Larry. Larry, you're a former inspector. You say that you think that the police are doing their job. I'm going to leave it at that, and I want to thank you for your insights. Looking at the pictures on michaelsavage.com, I almost see a full body print against that door, Larry. I see what looks like a head banged up against the door. I see a hand that tried to stop a door from opening. I see almost a foot that banged up against the door. Do you see any such things in that picture?
It's difficult to tell from the quality of the photo, but I'm sure right now they're poring over that scene, is my guess.
Well, I have a new theory now, which is that after he rode the elevator up, someone rode up after him after it went back down. Somebody rode that elevator up, and then somebody was waiting for him in the hallway, and they grabbed him, maybe subdued him, whatever they did. And this guy started to struggle after he was not a weakling. He was a bicycle rider. He was very strong. I think there was a struggle. And then the doors opened from the inside. Somebody rode up and opened those doors from the inside. They got him in there that way. That's certainly a possible theory, isn't it, Larry?
Very possible, sir. But and there's a lot of them. You never rule anything out. You take them one step at a time. Everything.
That's what I'm saying. But doesn't a homicide inspector have to have a very fluid mind and evaluate all possibilities?
You just have to stay on the table, Mike. You don't take anything off the table until you can rule
it out. I swear to God, you're Clint Eastwood. I know you are.
Not really.
But Larry, thanks for calling the show and being such a good sport. I'll be back with other topics right here on the Savage Nation. Be here.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All right, here are some of the new headlines for this hour. India names Pakistani masterminds, and they date the plot to 2007. Pakistanis are rioting, saying that it's all a conspiracy against Allah. They're saying that the assault was not done by Pakistanis. It was done by, I don't know who, but they say it wasn't them. So there we go again. Carmakers' bailout pleas hit Senate. Skepticism. Clinton scrambles to reduce campaign debt. Oh, well, maybe she could write another book that nobody buys. There'll be another reason for the publishers to go bankrupt. What, FBI girls told agent evangelist Alamo abused them. Is that all the FBI does now is abuse stories? What is this? They have a death here in San Francisco. I'd like to see them investigate instead of alleged abuse. Gun club and police chief indicted in boy's Uzi death. California trio charged with torturing abusing teen. President and First Lady buying home in Dallas. All boring, frankly, all these stories. They're boring. I'm not interested in any of them. What happened to the great days of the news, you know, Sputnik, moonshots? No one pays attention when they go to the moon. It's like nothing. Oh, yeah, well, what did Tracy Spears, you know, whatever her name is, Spacey Spears, did she puke on herself last night? Was it on Sunset Boulevard, or was it on another? Was it on Booty Boulevard? That's the big news. People don't even get their brain dead. Man assaults girlfriend with burger. New Jersey woman sues Pennsylvania sports bar for toilet seat break. Look at this. This is in the news. Man uses candy cane to subdue attacker with knife. Customer spots cook butchering deer in pizzeria. Ugh. I got to see that story. What do you mean butchering deer in a pizzeria? Customer spots cook butchering deer in pizzeria. That got my attention for three reasons. See how you react to things? Look how I react to things. It shows you the inner landscape of my mind. Why did that story attract my attention? I'll tell you why. There's three words in it that triggered my response. Like it's like Manchurian Candidate: cook, deer, and pizzeria. The cook part of it because I'm interested in food. The deer part of it because I like animals, and pizzeria because I love pizza. Allentown, PA, a Pennsylvania pizzeria insists venison is not on the menu despite the impression a customer may have gotten when she saw one of the cooks butchering a deer in the shop's kitchen. Manager of Stromboli Pizza in Allentown says a customer saw one of the restaurant cooks carving up a deer, but John Okamus says the venison was not intended for the store. He says he shot a doe during a hunt and left the carcass in the store's kitchen. Okamus said a customer complained to the city health department, blah, 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 after seeing a cook mistakenly butcher the deer. The department investigated the incident but did not issue a citation. I guarantee the department did a bigger homicide investigation of the deer than they would have if a guy fell down an elevator. Cymbal shot, boom. You know, I once had relatives in Pennsylvania in that region. And the first time I ever ate a horse meat was in an area right there. I can't name the town. It was alleged that the beef sandwiches we were eating were actually horse meat. I remember then we were like from New York, like the geek relatives took us to a horse meat place. I'll never forget that story. It wasn't just stringy. It was like the pot roast I had from an Italian restaurant the other night. There's a local Italian joint that they don't take reservations, but the food is old style, greasy Italian food that on a cold night, you know, when you want to build up your cardiac quotient and usher in the Grim Reaper, you order in the pot roast and mashed potato. potatoes. I got the pot roast. It was so stringy, it was beyond belief. I would have rather had horse meat than what they served me. One of those off the road with a Joe in it. You know, I can't go into details. That's all. It's the kind of place where loud contractors go to get drunk and they don't know what they're eating by the time they eat it because they've had four drinks. So they could serve them shoe leather with marinara sauce and they'd say, well, really good, really good, really good, really good. But the it was really good, actually, other than the shoe leather. Ravioli wasn't bad. I don't eat pizza anymore. I used to eat a lot of it, but why am I rambling on about? Because I'm sick of the elevator death. That's why. What do you want me to do? Talk about it ad infinitum? Leave it to the authorities. Let the authorities do their job. Just as you're letting the Treasury Secretary manage the economy. He's doing a great job. Where's there an authority that does his job right anymore? Authority. Some authority. What authorities do you believe in anymore? You know, that's not a bad question now that I rambled into it. Which authorities do you still believe in? Not by name necessarily, but by category. What authorities do you believe in? I don't know who to believe in myself. My dog. I believe in my dog. I don't believe in the church. I don't believe in the synagogue. I believe in the Bible up to a certain point. But even there, I can get very cynical some nights, and I just shake my head. I said, I can't believe it. All they were trying to do was control the wild men of their time. I mean, them ancient Israelites were out of control. These were tough dudes, olive growers. They slaughtered anybody who looked at them the wrong way. They were from the old world. It was, an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. So the rabbi comes along and he says, God is looking at you. Don't you dare sleep with your brother. Because if you do, you're going to be stricken by lightning. I guess a lot of them were sleeping with their cousins and brothers and uncles because, man, it's in the Bible. You got to think about it. I mean, why did they write those prohibitions in? Some of them made sense from a health point of view. In the old days, there was no refrigeration, so you didn't eat pork because there was trichinosis. Okay, you can understand that. But the reason they condemned homosexuality in the Bible is because a lot of the guys were doing it. And figured if they were going to die out as a people if that went on. So, oh God, you know. So they did that. And the women can't do it either with a mortar and a pestle. That has to be, and that has to end. We've got to knock that out because if we have that, then they're not going to have babies and stay at home with a carriage. And so they wrote it in order to make sure the society went on. But you have to look at it from the point of view of the ancients. It's because people were doing it, just as they're doing it now. Why did they do it? They did it because, I don't know, it was less complicated. They went out and tended sheep, and they figured all they're going to do is get home and get a woman complaining to them. What the heck? Let's get it over with here. That way I don't have to bother. Whatever. So the old guy said, look, if this keeps up, we're going to die out as a people. So you better tell them that God's – so we're not going to do this anymore. And so they made it like a crime if you did. But there's a bigger story to it, which is this. There are many impulses that man has that have to be suppressed or repressed in order for the society to survive at all, let alone flourish. In other words, it's not that the impulse in this direction, in particular homosexuality, want to talk about it for a minute, is such an evil impulse. It isn't. Nor is it such a odd impulse, because it isn't. It's a rather common impulse, and it's not that evil when you think about it. And the reason society has to condemn it is because if it doesn't condemn it, society ceases to go forward. Because the men are just going to not have babies. That's all there is to it. See, that's one of the reasons. It's not that it's evil or that it's unusual. There's a reason to repress certain impulses, and that's for the betterment of society. But since we no longer care about society, we care only about ourselves, we care only about our impulses, we care only about what feels good, we care only about the moment, we care only about how it feels, we don't care about these things anymore. So society says, all right, since nobody cares about anybody, let's do what we want and forget about it, let it all go to you know where. That's basically Michael Savage's view of biblical prohibitions against certain impulses. Now it gets more complicated when it comes to not eating reptiles or flying animals with certain hooves and whatnot. It's very hard to figure that one out. I can understand the pig because of trichinosis. I'm talking cynically now. Make believe this is a character of me, not me. Okay, you know I go into characters like Scungili. All right, so make believe. And now I'm Michael the Cynic. I'm cynically looking at the Bible. God doesn't mind because he's in charge anyway. What does he care what I say? Saying, oh, God's going to get mad. He's mad at me anyway for all of my whole life. So let him be a little bit more mad, okay? But the point I'm making is this. He don't care if you question him. Mother Teresa herself questioned God her whole life, according to the last memoirs. Every day she asked, why am I living so miserably? Why am I not having sex on Sunset Boulevard in a nightclub, in other words? I don't mean exactly that. But she asked herself, why am I suffering so much? I don't see God anyway. He doesn't write. He doesn't call. I pray day and night. I do the beads, and I still don't see him. What's the point of all this? She said, the old lady, in her old years. Questioned, every minute, questioned. Wondered, fetched, complained. I'm a spinster. I have nothing to show for it. Not even a Cadillac Cimarron from 1982. Nothing. All I do is tend to the poor and the lepers. What kind of horrible life did I choose? All right, you better hope to God that there's a reward, man, because if there isn't, she sure wasted her time, man. She could have been having a good time in Hollywood. She could have made a name for herself in talk radio, no doubt. So now I'm committing blasphemy on the show to some of the audience. Now they're shocked. Now I'm not going to go to a break. We're not doing the interview. I don't want to hear it anymore. I really don't want to hear any more about trials and Islamists. I'm so out of patience with it all. I'd rather drift into my own reveries in my own cynical fashion about various things. So if you'd like me to use my cynical viewpoint on any topic, give me a call at 1-800-449-8255. Probably lost 90% of my P1 audience just now. Now it's over now. Ooh, you dared question the Bible. You dared question Mother Teresa. Yes, I dared question the Bible and Mother Teresa. What do you want me to do? There are days I question myself, my existence, your existence. Why shouldn't I do that? Study illuminates star explosion from 16th century. That's interesting. Science and technology. I love science and technology, being trained in one of the fields or two of them. And spent so many years in that world till I realized it was so political I just couldn't take it. But the reason I went into the sciences is because I felt that it was the only place to find the real truth. I knew politics was full of questions and almost no answers, and it was all lies and all delusion and illusion. You know, you look back on Linus Pauling, one of the great scientists. He was once my hero. And he wrote the reason he went into chemistry is because it was the only area he felt he could find the truth in. In other words, an element is an element is an element. You can't fudge it. Either it's gold or it's copper or it's zinc or it's mercury. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, you can prove that you are looking at copper or gold or zinc, etc. And so he loved chemistry because it was as close to the real truth of anything that he could get to. And that's what appealed to me about science to begin with, is it was the ultimate, let's say the closest you can get to the truth was through science, you know, deductive, inductive reasoning. But then as I went along, I found out it was just like most other fields. It was already becoming highly politicized in the 70s. In other words, which topics got grants depended upon the politics of the day. Then when the ethnic thing came in and suddenly everybody wanted to do studies on African-American health, and suddenly there was tons of money for African-American health studies, you know, that hypertension was not actually caused by sodium and eating a diet rich in sodium was caused by something else. I mean, everything became political. There's nothing you could do that wasn't touched by the political world, and so I decided, you know what, it's not right for me. I can't take it anymore. So here I sit many years later in the in a phase of my life that I never thought I would see. I didn't. I never thought I'd be this old. I never thought I'd get here to this point in my life. And I'm basically sharing my thoughts with you and analyzing things with you. And if my answers please you, then ask me some questions by calling 1-800-449-8255. I want to now go to some of the stories I have up on michaelsavage.com because, well, I can gull you into going to my website. That way, and you might buy some books. It'll really change my lifestyle. In other words, if you bought 100 more books today than I would have bought otherwise, it's going to change the way I live. I'll buy another Frankfurter tomorrow. But the fact of the matter is there are some good stories. Questions linger about death of Israeli activist. Death elevator shows signs of struggles. It's a very important piece of evidence. O'Reilly shows true colors, joins with Kennedy's. Is he another McCain? Very important story. When you see that this man is actually showing himself to be what he is. Moscow mayor links gays to spread of AIDS. I'll let that lie where it is. Barack Obama's Rainbow Coalition, minorities, women fill top posts. Ah, if only women and minorities, if only appointing women and minorities could save America, I'd be a very happy man. Does it necessarily make them better because they're women and minorities? Does it make them better because they're multi-ethnic? Does it make them better? Lawyer slain by S&M madman obsessed with victim's whip mistress girlfriend. That's not a bad story. An attorney at one of New York City's most prestigious law firms who had a secret passion for S&M was shot to death by a rival for the affections of a brilliant Ivy League stunner who moonlights as a dominatrix. Where did this all come from, a dominatrix? When did that come up in America, dominatrix? I mean, I could say a few words about it. When I was a kid, we didn't need to go to a dominatrix. All we had to do was argue with our mothers. I'll be right back. Savage. So, I went into a new character tonight accidentally. I didn't do Dr. Unsavage. I did Cynical Savage on the Bible. Just to show you that I do sometimes, you know, get into these moods. I mean, even Moses questioned God in the Bible. So forgive me if I drift into it once in a while. But then we got into the dominatrix issue. I don't understand that part of it. I truly don't understand it because any heterosexual woman today over the age of 25 who grew up in America is basically a dominatrix. You ask any heterosexual guy within a short period of time, what, do you think it's going to last? 90 days. After that, you're living with a dominatrix anyway. So what's the difference? Why do they have to go to a professional? What does a professional dominatrix do that an ordinary woman doesn't do in America today? Half the women look like post-op transvestites to begin with, trying to look like they're gay or keeping up with the mores of the society. You ever see what they look like? They thin themselves down. They're on some kind of diet pill. The lipstick looks like it was applied by, what's her name? Joan Rivers when she was high. They all have a mouth on them. The guy is like pushed into the background. It's any wonder I'm in talk radio. The safest place for a man to be today is in talk radio and listening to it. Anyway, you want to talk about it? You want me to take on the cynical view? I'll do that. I got plenty of, but I'm out of time already. What is this today? I'm loquacious. I know what it is. I know what it is. I'm drinking too much coffee. It's very bad for my health because it makes the show better, but I pay for my sins later. I can't sleep at night. So it's a toss-up every day. Do I do a great show for 3 straight hours, and then at the end of the day I can't sleep? Or do I not drink that coffee in the afternoon, in addition to all the coffees and the rock star and the this and that I had earlier, and then do a draggy show, but then I can have a drink at night and then I can sleep at night? It's a complicated ritual. It's my problem, not yours. I'm just thinking out loud. 1-800-449-8255 to look sharp and beyond the ball. Oh, Modesto, Bernadette, quickly, start the conversation, fire away.
Yes, I wanted to just let you know that I feel the same way about vacations. I don't want to go. I want to stay home.
Does that make us soulmates?
Yes.
Oh, you mean just because we don't like vacations, we're soulmates?
Well, there's a lot of things about that you talk about that I.
Well, let's not go there. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. No one called me on the dominatrix comments, which I thought were very funny, or my cynical view of the world, and didn't ask me to be, you know, to apply my cynical views of anything. I just clicked on the leprechaun who we're reading his obituary on radio tonight. I think this guy's not long for Fox News. I've never seen anything right in my life. For him to be kissing the fingers of that hack, that hag, that thing, that creature from the Black Lagoon, Barbara Walters, who has to be as low as they come. And to see this faker, O'Reilly, kissing her fingers for one reason. He wants to be on her show, or the guy wants a job on ABC. He's always wanted to be a talking head in mainstream television. And he's made for it. He's perfect for it. He's a Metro Politico. A guy like O'Reilly is a Metro Politico, meaning he can go whichever way the wind blows, that's where he is. San Diego, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I wanted your cynical viewpoint on homeowners association.
My cynical viewpoint on homeowners association. In which state and in which county?
San Diego. I'm in the South Bay, Chula Vista, California.
Well, I could probably do a better job on a homeowners association in Florida than anywhere else because they're the benchmark for lowlifes in the homeowners business. They're mainly failed social workers or teachers from New York on a double grift who have nothing to do with their lives after they declare disability. They go down to Florida in a cheap condominium, and they make everybody's life like in Stalinist Russia.
Well, you know, we pay the property taxes, and we got to pay for the utilities, for the street lights, and pave our streets. and we got rules that people buy into, and then you try to enforce the rules, and people act like you're the neighborhood policeman, and everyone hates you.
What do you mean, like no children in the homeowner, like in one of those retirement communities, no children?
Well, you know, I live in the South Bay, and a lot of people down here have a certain demographic, like to paint their houses really bright colors, and, you know, we have a very neutral paint tone, and, you know.
Oh, that whole, I don't know how I could ever live in one of those communities. It's very hard. I understand there's a lot of senior communities where you're not allowed to have people under a certain age, like 50, but that they're lowering the age in order to get more people in there because a lot of the units are sitting empty. And there's a lot to be said for people who are older because you don't have any children around that way. God bless children, but there are times you really don't want them running around making noise and screaming and that kind of thing. I think older people are entitled to live without children around them, don't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's good to have grandkids. I visit my grandparents, and I look for the day where you can move into hopefully a quiet neighborhood with some folks that are just want the same thing you want, peace and quiet, you know?
Yeah, good luck. Try it in Marin County, California, where they all have a peace sign on their curb, and they all have Obama signs on their car, but every night they're burning a wood fire, polluting the air, and their stupid children are on drugs hitting drums or playing guitars. Thanks for the call. Don't get me started on it, all these phonies in Marin. Well, I think I'd have to move out to a cow pasture in Sonoma County, get an 80-acre farm and cows. I might be much happier. I think Davy Crockett was right when he said that he always moves when he smelled. Was it Davy Crockett? That he moved when he smelled the smoke from his neighbor's fire. He had exactly the right view of the world. The bane of the suburban world are wood fires. They should be banned throughout America. You want a wood fire, live in the country. They should be banned in the cities, and they should be banned in the suburbs. It's interesting to me how many of these people have these green, you know, lifestyles, except when it comes to their rotten, stinking chimney, you know. Why am I talking about this? Because I feel like it. I don't want to talk anymore about the reality of the world. It's giving me a headache. Jihad recruiting effort may explain missing Somalis in Minneapolis area. You hear this story? I guess a few cab drivers went missing. Dozens of young Somali men in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area have disappeared in recent months, causing community members and U.S. intelligence officials to feel that they are joining jihadists. No kidding. Oh, Sherlock, you figured that one out? You mean the same people who wouldn't drive a blind person around with a dog because of their wonderful religious viewpoints might just turn out to be jihadists? How can you figure that out, Sherlock, when you wouldn't do anything about that? Young Somali men in the Minneapolis area. Give me a break, Minneapolis, St. Paul. You talk about a gelding. I think the word gelding came from that town. A few people, it's like Oregon, Portland, Oregon. Not only is the ore gone, the men are gone. They left a long time ago. All the women with the B1 Volvos drove out there 21 years ago from San Francisco. The next thing you know, you were living in a Klavan. It's like the city run by a Klavan of psychos, Portland, Oregon. I never saw anything like it. How does this happen? Oil, $25 a barrel. See, Drudge does good show prep for me because he puts it up late. He tries to wait as late as he can. And then when he puts it up like around this time, I may as well just you. Look, Matt, you do a good job. Why is oil shock prediction $25 a barrel? But our friends in Iraq wanted it $80. The fat slobs we liberated say $80 a barrel is good. You hear this? They won't pay us for liberating them. But they want $80 a barrel oil, and we do nothing about it. Who's we? Who's we? Our authorities. Our authorities. For the last time, Bush lights National Tree. Good riddance already. Take a walk. You know, I'm looking forward to him never being seen again. I never want to see him on Barbara Walters crying. I know it's coming. They're going to put him in a pink shirt crying over the war in Iraq. He didn't mean to. He didn't want to. A demon made him do it. It's because he gave up drinking. He couldn't help himself. But now that he's drinking again, he feels better. What are you talking about? Her and him and the librarian. Take a walk already. Big librarian. A big book lover. I wrote the best conservative books in America consistently for the last 5 years. The big librarian never heard of one of them. What a bunch of frauds they were. Texas. They're from Texas like I'm from Texas. Play Deep in the Heart of Texas. What now? Where are the ships? Where are the Russian ships? Have they come up the East River yet? The fire
stars
upon the...
at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas, the prairie sky is wide and high.
It's not funny. I hate radio shows that do that. That they play a song and... And usually they go on too long. That's the one thing you tell about timing. At least I can the bad music right away because I hate it as fast as you do, if not faster. You ever hear a klutz in the business? They'll play music and a minute, 2 minutes, and you're supposed to listen to it. This is beautiful. This is absolutely beautiful. Watching people like the Leprechaun fall out of the radio business. It is. There's a certain victory. You got to understand, with all of the lights and the camera and the action and the ex-stripper or whoever he had sitting next to him there. Ah, ha, ha, Bill. Oh, Bill. Oh, Bill, you're such a big man. Oh, Bill. Oh, Bill, put that loofah down. Oh, Bill. Oh, Bill. Oh, Bill. Oh, Bill, that's so great, Bill. Oh, Bill. Oh, Bill, take a walk, Bill. Go back where you always belonged. Do a split screen now, one blonde bimbo after another. He's never on a screen alone, by the way. Every time he's on the air now, it's either a girl or a murder. Him and Nancy Grace ought to do a show together. You know, sun shines. What do you want me to talk about here? There's no news. The only news I want to talk about, you don't want to hear about anyway. Elevated deaths swept under the rug. Death in Bombay by Islamists. You don't want to hear about that. Another Israel preparing options for strike at Iran. Yeah, give me a break, Israel. The only strike they'll have in Israel is over, you know, who produced an expensive bagel. They're not going to strike anything. 2 years I've been hearing about this. Israel this, Israel that. Any minute we're going to. Reminds me of the kid in the street. You take one more step, that's it. And then you keep pushing the guy. What, you push me one more time, you're going to get it. Then they push him one more time. That's it. One more push and I'm going to hole again, push. Nothing happens. It's sad to watch this. You think it's funny to watch this? I'm doing it because I'm goading them into doing it already. Not that they listen. They listen to a word I say, and that's their business. They don't want to live. They don't want to live. They want to have suicide, want to commit suicide as a nation. You're doing a great job. It's like slow motion, you know, euthanasia, Israel. Israel preparing options for strike at Iran. Oh, yeah, right. 2 years now. Remember 2 years ago? Iran is 20 days away from the bomb. 19 days, 18 days, 17 days. Then it's like 8 years from now, Iran's going to have the nuclear. Then it was 7 years. Now it's 2 years. Now it's a month. They change it by the day. Every day they change on when Iran's going to have the bomb. And the minute they do, we're going to strike. We have no option. We have to do it. If we don't do it, you won't do it. How come you won't do it when you're supposed to do it? Even though we're a vassal state of yours and we took trillions of dollars for weapons we never used and we're supposed to protect the oil pipeline. We did nothing for the last three wars except hide in the bunker and our children were dying. We're still your best ally in the Middle East. Don't worry about it. We need more money for more weapons that we won't use. But give us the money so we can make more weapons because we don't get a dime of it anyway. It's all for your own munitions manufacturers. It's all a scam. It's a double talk. Even though it says we give us $6 billion, we get it. We don't get it. They get it because they're building the F-100, the F-18, the F-19, the F-20, and the planes we can't fly or won't use. But we have them, and even though you got the money, you may believe it went to us and everyone's happy. And that's why we're going to take on Iran. Any minute if they push us one more second, we're going to strike at them. San Diego Rose, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, there's a fine line, as you know, between insanity and genius. And right now, you are just being brilliantly insane. And it's great because...
Well, thank you. That's quite an offhanded comment coming from you. It's really a brilliant stroke of luck that I'm not angry.
Well, you just... bring us the truth and what we see in the news.
Well, what's insanity and brilliance have to do with it? Where that? I don't understand. What's that part of it? Why did the insanity come up?
Well, after you look at the MRI of your brain that's on the, and I think in most people's brains, that fine line of truth and insanity, if we kept looking at all this news that we see on your website, and that's right.
Well, you go crazy like I did, in other words.
Right.
Well, no, on the back of my book, The Author's Brain Exposed, which is very funny, it's very novel, where I took a sagittal section from one of the CT scans of my brain, it actually looks like a smiley face, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You have a copy of that? No, it doesn't. It absolutely looks like a smiley face. I thought it was brilliant to put a picture of my brain on the book. No, you want to talk about that for a minute, Genius and Madness? It's a great topic, by the way. I could go into this for an hour, because many years ago, I was very, very concerned about my brilliance. And I was confusing my brilliance with madness because people always said, oh, you know, there's such a fine line between brilliance and madness. There is no fine line between brilliance and madness. Either you're brilliant or you're mad. There's no fine line. You don't slip back and forth unless you're unstable and you've been in a mental hospital. You've done something crazy. I've never done anything crazy. Why do people assume that people who are particularly bright or brilliant are this close to insanity or that close to the edge? Why is that a common assumption?
Well, I think basically because we all wish we had the guts to say what you have to say.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with brilliance. It has to do with looking at something and coming up with the right conclusion and saying it. know, or else you wind up like O'Reilly, thrown off radio, who's neither brilliant nor insane.
No, you're more like on.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist that one. You're being very kind tonight. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Where's the guy who read the book to his dying father? I got to get that call in. Indiana, Bruce, welcome to the show. Thank you for calling. Please tell us your story.
Dr. Savage, I bought a copy of Psychological Nudity, and the day it came, my stepdad died. I got a call that I needed to go to see my mother, and I went to my house real quick, and your book was there, and I took it with me because my father and I had a very mixed relationship, and I wanted something
Welcome to the club. Welcome to the club. So what happened? You took the book to the hospital?
I took the book to the hospital, and my mother was weeping with her very religious friend who she hadn't seen for years because my stepdad wouldn't allow it. And yeah. I started to read from the book, made them better.
To him? Did he understand? Was he cogent? Was he awake?
He had a severe hematoma. There was blood coming in off his skin. I didn't see it, but I read it, and
was he alert when you were there reading the book, or he didn't even hear you?
He wasn't initially, but as I read, he started to come round. And
what story did you read to him on his dying moments?
I read. I started with your dietary stuff, and then I read The Fly and the Tuna, your story about your father sticking up for you, and I started reading it. And it was just, you know, I had not read your book at all. And as I read it, I thought I saw him start, you know, becoming cogent. He was before that a little bit.
Amazing. I can't imagine just because of a fly and a tuna fish.
Yeah, he couldn't move his head to the left, but he could.
Oh, my God. I don't know whether you're pulling my leg or what, but I hope it's true, you know. All right. Thanks for the call. I got a migraine in the right eye from that call. I don't know why, but my right eye immediately started to hurt me. I have a slight nausea now and a migraine. I don't know, something got triggered in the call. It's the death and dying. I don't even want to think about it. It's a terrible topic. Every night I go in my living room, I get ready for television after, you know, the show and dinner. There's a box of ashes with my last dog, Snowy, there. I don't know, and it was creepy, the ash thing. I don't know what to do with it. I moved it around once, then I get spooked. I don't know if it's really her ashes. I think these guys in the business are all criminals. The whole business is this crematoria thing. How do I know they didn't burn leaves? All right, Johnny, go get some leaves over there. You're switching the... What? Get out of here. You talk about this, I'll cut your throat. We don't actually put the person or the dog in there. What are you talking about? We sell them for body parts. It's a big business in India. They use the... For autopsies, you know, we sell all the... They use them over there in their medical schools the way we used to use them, so they're using us. So what are you giving the people there? We're getting leaves from the park, especially around this time of year, and bring them in. We burn the leaves, and we give them in a box with tears. It says, like, Snowy on the box, or John Smith, the father. Here has your father's ashes. How do you know if it's their ashes? I think there should be a required DNA certificate on, because there's so many, what do they call that, Beowulf? I don't even know what they call it anymore. It's so alien to my being. When they burn you after you're dead, they throw you in an oven. Crematorium. How come Jews they're like, avoid a Hitler's crematorium? I mean, naturally so. Why would a Jew commit himself to a crematorium after he's dead? It's so unbelievable to me how everything's melting down. We're like living through a reformation of everything. Catholics have melted down. Half of them want to be cremated. So against the religion. Abortion, euthanasia, against the religion. They do it anyway. You know. And this whole thing with the crematoria, does that melt the skull and the teeth too? What do you get back? Is the temperature so hot that it actually burns the teeth? Does anyone know how to? I don't want to talk. But when they put you in the oven there, it's like industrial level heat. Your bones are turned into ash too. Bones and teeth and skull is nothing. Or they sell a few of the bones on the side over to like a dog food company. You talk about cynicism. I have no faith in anything. Nothing. Zero. I have faith in my dog. Because he's capable of anger, too. For example, during the show, I swear to God, this happened just tonight. I didn't want to tell you about it because you'll get very upset. I brought him a bone to work to the radio studio because I never give him a bone, but I was playing with him. I felt he has back teeth that I never used. Really good breakers. I mean, these things can crush a bone, even though he's 12 pounds. Man, you don't want to get a finger back there. I felt he could break a bone. So I bought him a bone, had it made. I gave it to him under the thing, and he goes like schizophrenic on me. The minute I give him a bone, he's growling because my feet almost went near the bone. He looked at me like he was crazy. You know, he went like, it was like the Shining, the dog, like the poodle became like the Shining dog. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Never bring a cane to a gunfight as the Indian police did. They have no guns over there. That's why the 10 bums could take over a whole city. Talk about disarming America. My God, just think if there were people with guns, what they could have done to these Pakistani scum. North Carolina, George, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I don't blame your cynicism because I worked for a short period of time at a cemetery where they cremated the bodies. I was the salesman for the plot.
Did they actually cremate the bodies and give the ashes to the people, or was it the leaves?
Yeah, they put the body inside the oven, and after the flesh is all consumed, then they take the bones and they put them through a grinder. And the grinder goes into a hopper. And then they scoop out some of the bones from the hopper, put it in the urine, and they give it to the person. Now, each time that they scoop out, they don't clean out the hopper. So if you go home thinking that you've got Aunt Susie in your urine, you've also got Uncle John from somebody else.
Oh, God, it's as bad as I think. And it's all mixed. And are there animals in there, too?
Pardon me? No animals. Just human.
So
bodies.
This is why the Bible prohibits cremation, really.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's why they don't want you to contaminate a corpse like that. Every religion has a ritual about this. This ritualized crematoria stuff really worries me. What that folks would give their remains to a crematorium. It's there's something so anti-life about it, George.
Absolutely. If you do some DNA on the remains that you have, you'll find out that not only do you have Uncle Susie, but you got Uncle John too.
Let me send you a copy of Psychological Nudity. I think I've taken all I can have tonight. This is a perplexing problem, what to do with yourself at the end of the road. All your life you fear Hitler in the crematorium, and at the end you tell him, put me in a crematorium. Very smart. On the other hand, you want to lay on the ground and have a bug do it. Then there's the crypt. You can go to the Roman thing with the crypt. It's like buying a house.
Savage.